Okay. Well, I'm in traffic having fun. Windows down, so I'm not too hot. And we're going through the middle of Albuquerque. Oh, I tell you. Oof. I go to buffets every couple of weeks or so. And I ate a bit today. It was all good stuff. I'll grant you that. Lots of vegetables. Lots of cottage cheese. My soul food. It makes me think back to the days when I was a nutritionist. Or I acted like a nutritionist. I think sometimes they just give you jobs out of some kind of sense of desperation. I think I was some kind of affirmative action hire because I was a human male and there weren't any other nutritionists that were men. So it was kind of fun to grab me. I actually got an award for having the best breastfeeding numbers. And boy, did I take a ribbing for that kind of business. All the ladies thought that was quite the thing. That it was my people that generated the most had the most breastfeeding. They all thought I was doing something. I said, not that I'm aware of, except just encouraging them to do it. We'll see. I can give you the advice that I gave to most people when they would come see me. You know, we would do some checks. We'd poke fingers to try to figure out if people were anemic, which I think was a little, I don't think it was really necessary. Now, it was supposed to be, now, that was what qualified them. And a whole lot of people would get qualified based on that almost exclusively. And, well, anyway, we were supposed to do nutrition education, and mine was rather short and easy and didn't require any disclosure at all. We would have people do do kind of a meal recall, and it wasn't really based on the amount of food people ate. It was more based upon just what they ate. If they ate, you know, certain kinds of food, so we would go all the way through it. And always my biggest thing was, and people could either disclose or not. They didn't have to tell me. And I didn't really worry too much about if people had accurate ideas about what was healthy foods or not. All I would say is, what is the absolute worst thing that you eat too much of? And they would say something like cake, or soda pop, or I don't know, chicken wings, something like that. And I'd say, just cut way down on that. If you can get that out of your diet completely, all the better. I said, usually you'll save a lot of money. Because a lot of the things that we really like to eat that really aren't very good for us at all are among the most expensive things, too. And to be really honest, I never knew if anybody really did it or not. Because I wouldn't come back and, like, check them. I wasn't the sort of person. I don't think I still am. The sort of person that really you know, does checkups. You make goals, and I'll keep you on your goals. I think that was something that the program itself probably would have preferred that I do. But to be honest, if people weren't keeping up with their stuff and weren't keeping up with some goal that they had set with me, they wouldn't tend to come back because they would get really, you know, they'd be embarrassed. And a big part of the program was, it wasn't to get people off of the program. It was to get good food and good habits into the hands of these families, that they would have good things. You couldn't buy junk food with WIC benefits. Very particular about what you could use them for. And it was all pretty good stuff. I think the peanut butter was a little overwrought. Too many people, if they met certain criteria, we could give them a jar of peanut butter instead of like a bag of dried beans that they had to reconstitute. And part of the training was about things they could do with the WIC foods. Because it wasn't just like cracking open a bud and drinking it down. A lot of what you could get required some preparation, some foresight to be able to use it. We were really quite lucky in that the vast majority of the people in the program, I don't want to be mean or spiteful at all, were Hispanic, and Hispanics still have a deep tradition of home cooking. It surely is getting out of them. There's nothing like making people too busy, no adults left at home to cook meals. Although I have to say that even home-cooked Mexican food, for instance, just to give one example of types of food, they used lard a lot. Now, our program didn't provide them with lard, but other programs weren't very picky, and you could certainly get, well, you could get whatever you wanted with food stamps. And so a lot of the food that was produced was really fatty and had lots of flavor, but really, really greasy, I thought. And it's real kind of stick to your ribs kind of stuff. Very working class, which a lot of Hispanic families were working class, and worked hard hours. And yeah, and so it really wasn't bad to have that kind of cooking. Did they live all that long? Well, some of them did, but a lot of them didn't. Anyway, I'm on an interesting diet these days. I think I'm borderline diabetic. I've been warned of that for so many years, I got tired of hearing it. Because every time I went, they'd say the same thing, and you're going, but all this time has passed, I'm really doing nothing about it. Shouldn't I have, you know, and all of them would just threaten, oh, you're going to get diabetic, and it's going to be terrible, and you're going to have to do insulin and all that stuff, and you don't change your ways. And it just never seemed to change. Well, just a few months ago, I got a whole loaf of garlic bread. And I mean, big. It was probably 2.5 feet long. Double side. All the butter and the garlic on the inside. Now, of course, I got it for like 50 cents. It was on sale at the grocery store. Second, day old bakery stuff. And I just decided to eat the whole darn thing. And let me tell you, I got all of the stuff that you get when you have high blood sugar. You know, my extremities got all tingly. I even had some, I have some nerve damage at the very bottom of the heel of my left foot. And every once in a while it tingles a little bit as if it's getting repaired just a little. But by and large, I think it's gone. I don't feel anything in that one little patch. I've never done anything like that again, and I've sworn off the vast majority of easy carbs. I still do potatoes. I'll occasionally do some pasta, not very much. Other than that, I've kind of sworn it off and gone toward other foods. And everything's kind of settled down since then. If you don't produce much for insulin to have to worry about, you don't have to worry about the fact that you may not be producing much insulin. How about that for easy? And I know people come back and say, you can't do that. You can't do it. You're going to get yourself in trouble. It's going to be horrible. And you go, maybe so. And you go, but I try different things. I've really gotten to the point to where I try to get a sense for how what my body is saying to me about these various things. And so I'm really I try not to get too weird about it, because you don't want to be a slave to those kinds of things. I simplify it by just saying, well, these are the things I tend to eat, and it's not a keto diet I'm doing. You know, it's not chock full of protein, except for cottage cheese, which I love. Eat a lot of vegetables. Celery and carrots are a standby, because they actually do pretty good in the car for a week. I'm still eating on carrots that are 2 weeks old now. I do a lot of nuts. I kind of trade off between peanuts and mixed nuts. I'm really cheap, so it's hard for me to do mixed nuts very often because they're so danged expensive. Let me think. What else do I got going? Let's see. I don't think this is really going to be a Cohen Monk Mormon recording. I do some of those, but not exclusively. This will probably go to the personal file. It doesn't really matter now. I've got the same rig no matter what I do. So I just record. And Lisa's been really into whole food plant-based diet. It's kind of vegan. that's even more restricted, she doesn't keep to it very steadily, which I'm grateful for. But she tends to eat a lot more vegetables. Not that she didn't before. I think we ate pretty good before. She's trying to stave off pain in her joints, things like that. And it does a decent job until the pain just gets to, the pain just gets too much. There's only so much you can do with food. It isn't an amazing cure-all. It's not like, you know, prescription drugs or something like that. It can get you a long way, and if you don't have anything too serious, it could probably make you feel good all the way. But I think Lisa's stuff is getting a little tricky. And so, do I worry about her? Sure, I do. I love her with all my heart. I get very concerned that someday I may have to live life without her. And to be honest, I can't really do that. You know, I've got Matt, my son Matt, who is autistic to the point of not being able to be quite independent. And so he's kind of a tie-you-down sort of person. You know, you can't just say, well, you know, once my wife passes away, I'll go do all the things that I always wanted to do that I couldn't talk her into. And the problem is I've got a whole other person to consider there. And he's a pretty rough customer when it comes to what he's willing to do and what he's not willing to do. Regardless. Oh. So I really worry sometimes. Lisa's got some I think she's got some larger issues. And I think I talked her into not going to doctors particularly because I don't. And she really doesn't want to get cut into. She's been cut into a few times and she really doesn't like it. It's always caused her huge problems. And so she's pretty much sworn that all off. And just not going to do it, honestly. Just not going to happen. Okay. Anyway, I got to get some gas here. Oh, you know what? I need to plug this thing in. Or it's going to start having some problems. I get my gas on the local Indian reservation. Isleta, and prices are really good. Most other places, it's hovering right around $4, and I get it here for $3.50, and it's like, wow, that's nice. The only the one thing about it though is that I get such good gas mileage that a difference of like 10 or 20 cents really doesn't matter all that much. I might save 60 or 70 cents a fill up. So it means a little less than it would if I had a big, huge gas guzzling car. Every penny helps there when you're filling up, you know, 50 or 60 gallons. Here I am out recording while I'm filling up my gas out here in the open just because it's available. I'm trying to think of any other nutritional advice I tend to give people. There's computer advice I give and everything. I noticed that podcasts and like YouTube channels and stuff like that really start, I don't want to say they're narcissistic, but they really end up It's trying to be more about the people than anything else, than about what they're talking about, usually. You usually get onto a channel because you find the topics interesting. But after a while, you've said all that you can really say about a topic, and then either you go on to other topics or you start talking about yourself, because it starts feeling like it's kind of a personality thing. People want to hear from you. They want to hear about your life, and there are some vocal voices that really say that. I gotta say that it's probably, especially when it comes to girls with channels, it comes with guys who just feel like they're getting a personal relationship with the girl. And it's like, and it's problematic, you know. We're not getting enough people to get married and to actually make real live, deep, in-person commitments with each other. And these things can very easily kind of suck you into never getting around to that. And that's bad. I was really glad that I pretty much was married and going before any of this internet type stuff even began. When I was a kid, the closest thing to the internet were bulletin board systems, and I didn't have enough money to pay for long distance phone calls to call bulletin board systems. I've always been in somewhat isolated places. Anyway, so there's everything. Everything I have to say on that matter, and I think that was really good. I think my children suffer for being kind of attracted to these relationship substitutes. Virtual relationship substitutes like social media or having these channels. Everybody, for instance, everybody says that you'll really be successful with YouTube if you really make a deep connection with your audience. And you have to understand that your audience isn't a big gelatinous thing or a big monolith of people. I'm going to go the back way today, back to the crash site, so it's going to be kind of a little more settled. I'll get better gas mileage out of it. It takes a little bit longer, but it really it makes it inexpensive. And that's really very important to me. Anyway, what else do I have to say? Oh, you know, your audience isn't totally composed of the same sort of people, especially over time. They'll be attracted to the topic at first. And then some people just wander off. Some people are just lazy, and they'll just, you know, you do a subscription and you watch stuff. And I think there's a certain amount of tolerance in there. You know, you have really enthusiastic people that give lots of comments and say how much they love you. Be careful of the ones that love you. They may love you for strange reasons. At some point, you might get big enough to be a celebrity. I remember this one girl. She had gotten into Victorian and Elizabethan clothes, and she would sew them herself. And she was doing it as part of a reenactment museum. And she did one episode that really caught fire about bras and corsets. The only problem is besides what people were normally looking at her for, which was maybe, you know, a few thousand, who were really interested in the larger topic that she was into, there was a lot of people that ran into her because she was kind of cute and bubbly. And there's guys who are into corsets, women too. And that thing sent her from being a person that had been viewed, you know, a couple of thousand times to having something that had gone over maybe a million views. And all of a sudden, she was getting all kinds of advice, all kinds of encouragement. She was doing all sorts of stuff. She started partnering with a few other YouTubers. I don't know what you call them. Content creators. And they started doing stuff. And, you know, I think she was popular for just a little bit. And then it started getting to be kind of about her and the kind of things that she liked, which, you know, all the corset people, if they did come back for a second or a third episode, it didn't go very long. She figured out that was a big deal, so she actually did another show, but it didn't really attract half the attention the first one did. And, you know, to be honest, I didn't find the whole thing about that kind of wear very, very compelling myself. I found it interesting that she was so popular. She popped up on my thing, on my list. So I watched her, and then I watched her for a little bit longer. I think I even subscribed, it was all about sewing and material and backing and stuff like that. Now, I am a home economist, so I'm vaguely familiar with this, although I don't know how exactly I figured out how not to have to take a sewing class, but I never had to take a sewing class. I took a textiles class, so I had some background in some of the fabrics she was using. But yeah, and it just became this kind of small thing, and unfortunately, I hope she didn't invest a lot of borrowed money in becoming this amazing YouTube phenomenon, because I don't think it probably lasts very long. Although, once you get big on any level at all, even if it's under weird pretenses, it brings people out of the woodwork and it makes you more popular, and you will tend to become kind of a big thing. I mean, it's not going to be millions of viewers anymore, but it may be up to 10,000. And if you keep putting out content, people keep watching it, and they monetize it, because it wasn't racy at all. It wasn't getting her in trouble. She didn't, as far as I knew, she never talked about anything political or controversial. And she may very well still be making some money off of it. And it's not a bad thing. But yeah, over time it may get a little tricky. You may kind of have to back off your expectations, which is always a good idea, I think. And I forget her name. It's terrible. because it would be great to be able to do it and then get on the thing and say, so is she still out there? And you go, maybe. People come and go, I guess, on YouTube for the simple reason that, you know, most of the allure of most of these channels is the fact that they're novel and they're new and they're cool. Once you watch them for a little while, that tends to go away. And to be honest, once you're cranking out a lot of material, you really become a broken record. You know, you're talking about the same things all the time. And so even though I've got a bit of a podcast going, you know, I may not add to it quite as much. I did a lot of episodes. Like I did probably 6 or 7 last week, but I'm going to stretch them out. And there are definitely podcasts that, you know, it isn't that they lack popularity. It's just that, you know, your material runs out. There was this one that I listened to. I enjoy the movie Buckaroo Banzai. And somebody had done every 5-minute breakdown of Buckaroo Banzai. Bigger movies like Star Wars, some people do a minute-by-minute breakdown. And they'll have guests on and stuff like that. And this was kind of like that. Some of the lesser known characters in these things, you know, a big part of their life is garnering attention. And there's attention to be garnered. Now, I don't know if it ever produces anything really, but you know, if they're not really busy doing other things or have since retired from, you know, making movies or whatever, sometimes you can grab these people, and it's fun because they'll talk about all kinds of fun stuff that people are usually really interested in. People love the movie industry and everything around it. Everybody wants to be involved in movies. And so, yeah, I remember listening to that, and it only went about 25 or 28 episodes, and then they had left that one off, and that's all it was. It was like 24 episodes, great and wonderful, thanks for joining us and all that. And that was it. No more podcast. And I said, boy, you know what? That's probably the best way to do this stuff. Don't overstay your welcome. Better to go on and do something on something else. I seem to recall, the same people who did that also did Big Trouble in Little China, which is another movie I really get a kick out of. There was some shared producer, director, crew between those two movies, and it seemed to, you know, and so they did another podcast, 24, 25, 26 episodes. Every once in a while they would just pop back after they'd finished those episodes, maybe a year later, just check back in with everybody. You know, talk about who, what other projects some of the actors have been doing since. What others, who had died from, who had worked on that movie and then passed away. Things like that. Just a cute little follow-on episode. And usually only one. And maybe not another one ever again, because if it really doesn't get that kind of listenership, these guys have to kind of hop on to the next place where they can go to the next thing that might be interesting. So let me tell you, almost every movie that's ever been made probably will end up having a little bit of a podcast, just maybe enough to do stuff. I've been thinking about doing it for the Latter-day Saint stuff, but I know that's already been thought of. I just haven't gone out and looked for them yet. Those are the fun podcasts, mostly audio, you know, because those are really easy to churn out there. And you can do it on the smallest topic that you want to. And I think mine, Cohen Monk Mormon might be a little bit expansive, but not particularly. You know, there is only really so much that I get into, and I've already covered a lot of it. I'm going to be pulling a bit from my blog. I've got hundreds and hundreds of blog entries that I did on a lot of subjects, and trying to turn them into something that would, you know, be interesting for the podcast, especially to have the links in those podcasts to kind of, well, everything builds on everything else. If you do one thing, if you do an audio podcast of a topic, a subject, something, then it makes good sense to do a blog about it, maybe to get into a little more detail. Written stuff, at least for me, I do a lot more crafting on it than I will on something that I'm talking about, because I mostly talk off the cuff. I don't read. And then you do a YouTube video of these sorts of things. You know, and so you kind of run every single media that's out there. You make it all available to everybody. You make sure you cross-link all this stuff so that you can take advantage of all of them. Everybody, people, when they listen to something, they're decently likely to go to links as part of that podcast or as that video recording and read up more on it if you've got more to say, more to read on. I like reading better because it tends to be a little more coherent, and I'm just more accustomed to reading. Audiobooks were not much of a thing when I was young. Although I gotta say, I had this box set of The Lord of the Rings, done as kind of a radio play. I really like the old radio plays. The old time radio, almost all of it was radio plays. And I really enjoy listening to that. If you go to the Gopher server, which is where this is kept, you'll see a lot of old-time radio in the audio section as well. Really not into video because it takes up too much space, and I don't find video to be as compelling for me personally as audio is. Although I will do it on occasion because I know a lot of people who don't listen much to audio. Now, I like audio fine because I spend a lot of time sitting in my car, driving back and forth to work or back and forth to home. And if I'm not recording, which I tend to do these days, more recording than I do listening, but it's still there. I can still listen. And a lot of the podcast apps for like the Android. I use Android phones. I avoid Apple products. You know, I'm sorry. It was kind of a cult, and I'm not into culty things. Not really interesting so much to me. So yeah, that's kind of where I go. Audio, I have the most time for. I do write a bit, not as much as I used to, but I still do blog posts quite often. Usually get at least one done a week, if not every 2 weeks, one get done. Hopefully not just small potatoes, you know, not just something like a blurb. I've been looking kind of at the people who do it for pay. I'm not really sure. I'm not really sure if I can get it to be done by pay. Everybody hypes up Medium pretty hard as a good place to get paid for your writing. But it ends up falling down to how do you say it? It ends up that people only write about things that are going to get a lot of readers. So it might end up being a little more tawdry. I think it really wants to be like the old well, the whole electronic, the whole Earth electronic link. It was put together by a bunch of people that had been associated with the Whole Earth catalog back in the late 60s, early 70s. I was a subscriber. One of the few magazines I ever subscribed to, one of them was the Whole Earth Catalog, was a magazine that I paid for. I used to take a lot of electronics and information technology trade journals, but those were all given away for free at the time. They don't exist anymore, at least not in that fashion. They've just become, you know, news sites now on the internet. Really morphed. Anyway, I would actually get the Mother Earth News. I especially like the old Mother Earth News. I've got a lot of the old copies of the Mother Earth News. The bookstore at the college that I used to go to had a bunch of them and were selling them off. And I would, anytime I had a little bit of spare change, I would go and buy one. Because I really love the old Mother Earth News. Anyway, and I went and I got, I was subscribed to Whole Earth Review. It started out as the Whole Earth Catalog. And there were several different renditions of it, several editions, I suppose, many addendums, and then they came up with kind of a quarterly magazine called Coevolution Quarterly, always thought that if I could get one of those old microfilm or microfiche machines. I seem to recall that my old college had been selling off versions of these. I'm sure I could have gotten the hardbound copies. They actually had hardbound copies of the Coevolution Quarterly and the Whole Earth Review for quite a while. I think they stopped doing that. When that stopped being something that a library needed to do, was to keep printed copies of all these things. It's a darn shame because I really liked them that way. Anyway, regardless, I think most of those I've gotten rid of. Part of the problem was the Whole Earth Catalog wasn't really about sex too much or perversion or things like that. But over time, it kind of attracted a kind of old hippie. It was always done by hippies. As these hippies got older and as they tried to remain relevant, it seemed like they started picking up a lot of free speech stuff, which had a lot to do with perversions, sexual perversion. And I think they were losing a lot of their audience due to the fact that they were kind of getting really into that. They would get a guest editor for the Whole Earth Review, which finally became Whole Earth, and then it kind of died. It petered out. It was run by what was called the Point Foundation, started by Stuart Brand, the guy who was actually kind of the shepherd of the original catalog itself. He's still out there. He's still doing things. He's heavily involved in the Long Now Foundation, usually just with a whole lot of his buddies from those days. They've gone on to other things. Started a few nonprofits. Anyway, so just interesting. And I really got a kick out of those kinds of things. Very interesting readers off of the writers off the beaten path. And who do you attach yourself to? And anymore, you just write stuff and you go, well, I'm kind of in the vein of the Whole Earth Review. Although, to be really honest, not. I used to read it because I enjoyed the writing. It was starting to get to be kind of a twisted Playboy satire, and it was starting to get really stupid. And then they started getting better guest editors to come in and pull together content and put out this quarterly magazine. It was scattershot at best. So each issue almost had to stand on its own and get its own audience. And you really can't run a magazine that way. That's books. And so it just really, you really couldn't find people that would say, well, this one was really good and I didn't like this one at all, because whoever they got as the guest editor was all about kinky sex. And so that's what almost the entire issue was all about. And it's like, well, this isn't interesting to a lot of people, especially not me, with having to love my wife, and she is just diametrically opposed to anything even close to approaching such things. It's good. It keeps me out of trouble trying to make sure that I live the kind of life that pleases my wife. And you go, oh, you got codependency issues. You go, damn straight, Skippy, I do. My wife is incredibly important to me. I don't know how, to be honest, I don't think I'm that important to her to the same level. Things go the way that kind of she wants it. She tries to be nice to me, and I appreciate that. But I have sold so much of myself to just trying to be the kind of husband that pleases her that I don't have much else. They go, well, what would you do if I'm not around? You go, oh, I don't know. I'm going to have to figure that out. I think we're coming around full circle here. About good timing, because I'm going to need to go pretty soon and get things kind of updated. I go over to the LDS church here outside of Berlin and get on their Wi-Fi and take care of a few things that need taking care of. So things that need a little more bandwidth than just a little bit, a little soda straw that I pay for my, what do you call it? For my phone service and what little internet I use there. Anyway, so I think we came back full circle. So the whole thing, all the things we've talked about, really, you know, it's like, I don't even know if I want to use it that way. So I'm probably not going to. This is a personal recording. We'll put it on the other in the personal section. It's mostly a journal of things. So it kind of helps my kids, my family, my grandkids maybe get a little more sense for me and the kind of guy that I was. For better or worse, I'm probably far more open than I should be. You know, he says, oh, he wasn't a very good Latter-day Saint. You go, well, I wasn't stereotypical, probably. I don't think I am. I try to keep the standards. I think I do a pretty good job. But I've explored larger than most people think a Latter-day Saint should. And in doing that, I find myself continually drawn back into these standards, these morals. And really, how superior they are, how edifying they can be. And so, yeah, when I talk about the celestial kingdom and exaltation, stuff like that, I am really working toward those sorts of things. It isn't just talk. Everybody wants to go so fast. Okay, well, then I'll just let this go. Bye.